this station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars, car show, or car parts, car repair, symptoms. And that's how this show kind of works the very best. You call us up and tell us what kind of car you have, how many miles it's got on it, and then you give us the symptoms. It's doing this or it's doing that. And we're going to ask you questions. Now, the answer can be one of three: yes, no, or I don't know, and all of those are acceptable. The hard part is when you said it goes left and it really goes right, and that kind of sets us in the wrong direction. Sitting next to me is my son, Alan. He's been in the business for, I don't know,
Three and a half months.
And actually, he started with us picking up cigarette butts in the parking lot of the shop.
Yep.
And that was the days when we had cigarette butts in the shop.
Yeah, you don't see many of them anymore. I was telling my kids that the other day.
Yeah. It's just, that's not something, even with the car wash next door, we don't pick up cigarette butts.
No.
So it's kind of nice, but that gave you a job for a very long time. All righty, we've got a couple callers, but if you'd like to join us, we got three open lines right now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and the first caller is Mark. Mark, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have just a general question about brake pads.
Okay.
They range in price from like $20 to $50, ceramic, semi-metallic, rubber layer, core. What do you recommend? I don't understand the benefits and trade-offs of those things.
Well, first of all, it's really important that you order by application, because going from an organic pad to a semi-metallic pad necessitates a different rotor compound. And it also, there's a difference in braking in each one of those. So we kind of have to match the car. In reality, you don't have as many choices as you think you do. We have organic at the very bottom. That's asbestos. And then we went into semi-metallic. And the semi-metallic gave us a little better life. But in reality, they tore up some rotors that the organics didn't. So the organics were a little softer. And I'm speaking generally. The organics was a little softer. They didn't last as long as the semi-mets, metallics, but they were just as good for the appropriate car. Then we went into the ceramic.
Yeah.
And the ceramic is just like it thinks. It's a ceramic pad. It's really hard. And they don't necessarily last any more or any less, because brakes are like shoes. The more you walk in them, the more you're going to wear them. The more you use your brakes, the more you're going to wear them. And then what was the other one?
Some of them they have a multi-layer rubber core.
Oh, boy.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know. That sounds like a marketing strategy, and I would probably avoid that. I think you go in and you order by application. Now, every once in a while, they'll give you two options. And the option is this is what came in the car, but this is a step up. But I also want you to look for a brake manufacturer that you've heard of before. Bendix, Wagner, Raybestos, Delco.
Centric,
Motorcraft. Those kinds of names. If it comes in a box that doesn't have a name on it, I'd probably stay away from that. The real problem with cheap pads is they make our work look bad. They squeak. They rumble. The pedal pulsates
sometimes. Lots of brake dust.
Oh, and lots of brake dust. And obviously, if we don't want them to squeal, we're going to soften them up a little bit. That'll create brake dust, and everybody knows what that looks like on the front of your cars. Mercedes is probably the most famous car with brake dust all over. They even come with this foam pad that goes behind the tire that you can buy from the aftermarket to try to keep the dust off the fancy wheels. But application, I think really and truly you are best served by application. And I think, give me the year and make and model of the car you're thinking about.
It's a 2002 Ford Ranger.
Okay. I'd probably just put some semi-mets
on
that.
I wouldn't go the cheapest, and I would not go the most expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, if you said a 2017, Ferrari, then I would. That's a little bit different animal. But, you know, with your with your range, I wouldn't go the cheapest and I wouldn't go the most expensive. And just, a name brand.
And try to go with a name brand. You're far better off. Your Ranger doesn't weigh a lot. We don't need supersonic brakes on your Ranger. You're not going to have a three-axle trailer behind the Ranger. So let me ask you this. Do you have any idea how many miles you got off the last set?
I don't, because I bought the truck used.
Okay. All right. I can tell you that you're probably going to be in the 35,000 mile range with front brakes and the rear probably 60. And that's assuming you have rear shoes and front disc. So you're going to do, you know, front brakes every 35, somewhere around there, and you're going to do rear brakes every 50 or 60. There is a difference in the wear patterns, and doing all the brakes at one time is typically not in your best interest. Oftentimes shops that have their interest in front of your own, I'll qualify this, will take really good pads off the rear and sell you the entire brake job. It's always in your best interest to have you walk out there in the shop and look at them yourself. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Robert, you're up next. Robert, how can we help you?
Good morning, Dr. Mark.
Hey.
1982 Buick 3.8 liter V6, mildly modified Holley hitters and mild cam and stuff. Don't drive it a lot. Recently, about the last three times that I've driven it, if I leave it set for more than 2 weeks, when I go out and crank it, it won't start real easily, although it cranks all right, but then when it starts, the timing is off. The sucker is like, you know, cracking, blocking, and everything. I know right away. And so I stop, I reset the timing on it, starts right up, runs good, take it out for a run, drive it around for a while. It's happened twice. What's happening?
What year is this?
1982 Buick 3.8 liter V6. Even fire.
Okay. And so literally you're moving the distributor?
Well, no, the timing is off. No, when I start it up. You know, when I shut it down, it's running good, no problem, it's, you know, so on. And then when I go out maybe a week, sometimes 2 weeks later, because I don't get to drive it as much as I want, and I'll crank it, and then when it does start, it's out of whack. It makes an unbelievable
noise. I know,
but
you said then you went and changed or adjusted the timing and everything was fine. That's what I, did I
right,
miss that?
Then I shut it down. Go back and, you know, adjust the timing, put the timing back in where it's supposed to be, and then start it up, and it starts right up. Why would it go out of timing just sitting?
I don't know. I have never seen or heard what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, that's... How far out is it?
Oh, it's almost, when I turn that around, it's at least 40 degrees out.
Almost a quarter of a turn. There is no way in God's green earth that thing's going to even run at 40 degrees out. There's no way.
I mean, it's turned around so that when I pop the distributor cap off and check and see where everything is, the number one cylinder, even though it's at TDC, it's got to be the distributor, I guess. That's what I'm asking you. The rotor is like a quarter of circumference around.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to think real loud, out loud here. Okay. If we've got the gear slipping on the bottom of the distributor, the pin is gone and the gear is gone.
Okay.
What you say can't happen. I can't make it happen. So as we've got this distributor moving around, you're moving the top of the distributor. The gear stays on the camshaft. So, you know, pull the distributor out and look and see if the pin's gone at the bottom of the gear. But the chances of this car running and driving down the road with a gear that's slipping is about slim and none. So,
yeah, that's what I thought.
And then does it have a vacuum advance on it?
Yes.
Okay. So if the vacuum advance doesn't work, pull the cap off of it, grab a hold of the rotor, and rock it back and forth. It should not move in one direction, and the other move, it should be spring-loaded, and you turn it either clockwise or counterclockwise, and then let go, and it should spring back. That will tell you that the mechanical advances, the mechanical is working just fine. But if the rotor doesn't spring back, then the distributor mechanical advance is advancing or retarding the timing. But see, here's what's going on. You sent us in this direction. You sent us. You're saying it's timing, and there's no question about it.
I don't know.
That's that. Well, I'm more interested in how. What does it do? Is it pouring black smoke out the tailpipe? Can you hold a quality idle? Can you go drive the car in its existing state?
No. Okay. No, none of the above.
So you don't have any black smoke. You don't have the smell of fuel. You don't have the smell of sulfur.
No. No smell. Okay. No fuel smell. Nothing.
I can't. I don't. I don't even know where to start. I mean, I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking, is this thing running rich? You say no. Is this thing running out of fuel? Well, why is it when he messes with the distributor that it runs fine? I don't know.
Okay, after I haven't driven it for a couple of weeks, I do have to pump the gas pretty good, to get gas up in it. You know, I like to be able to do the old thing where you don't have to touch it at all, or you just hit it one time to set the choke and then let it start up.
Well, this has a carburetor. This has a feedback carburetor, so you're going to have to close the choke. All right, so you're going to have to close the choke. But again, you let it sit for 2 weeks. You get in it, and it runs bad. But I don't know if it's running too fat, too lean. But you're saying it's timing, so I'm looking at it through your eyes. Then you take and you mess with the distributor, but you don't know how much, and you just line up number one on the cap with number one on the rotor, and you put in the rotor on exactly top dead center and moving the number one plug over the top of that, your chances, let me put it to you this way, my chances are slim and none. Okay? Slim and none. So if you're moving the top of the distributor and you're loosening up the distributor and you're rotating it back and forth and all of a sudden it starts to run, the only thing I can think of is vacuum advance, mechanical advance, or the gear on the bottom of the distributor stripped, based on what you're saying.
But it would if the gear on the bottom of the distributor stripped, it would never run good.
Well, not only would it never run good, but the first time you accelerated, right. it would die. Yeah. It would fall on its face.
Yeah.
So that gear, if it's going to – and how does the gear strip or move when he shuts it off and goes to start it back up? And so I don't know. I don't know. I think what you should do is I think you should have a professional look at it. I think you should take it and have somebody park it overnight and look at it the next morning. And I mean – the equipment that we have today, I could probably diagnose that thing in less than 30 minutes. I could hit the nail on the head, and so could a lot of other shops in town. So I think your diagnostic time is probably 75 to a buck and a quarter, and they can tell you exactly what it is. But I think what you need to do is just tell them this. I park it, and it's fine. And then when I start it up, it runs really, really bad. And that's it. And let them figure out the really, really bad. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, if you'd like to join us and have a car problem. Again, we talk about year, make, and model, and then we talk about symptoms, and we talk about black smoke, or we talk about a vibration. We're going to ask you questions like, where does it vibrate, in the seat of your pants, stuff like that. So we have lots and lots of questions, but the other day, I want to tell you, I understand.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm going to read you something. This is kind of funny.
Okay.
This is from a guy who runs a Mercedes-Benz shop.
Okay.
Okay. This is Mercedes-Benz. So a good-natured customer comes in to pick up his car the other day. The car looks like it belongs in the junkyard. The paint is shot, the leather is ripped to shreds, and it's filthy dirty on the inside. He hands me the paper floor mat we had left in his car. And his wife says she'd like to know why we bother with the floor mat. She says, are we worried about getting our shoes dirty in his car?
Yeah.
And I like that humor, but the wife is saying she's probably embarrassed to be in the car.
Right.
And there's lots of our customers, not a lot, but there's some customers of ours, that the inside of their car looks like a trash can.
Oh, yeah.
And there has been times my truck has looked like that. So
no.
It's not anything about the person, but it's funny that the lady says you put the floor mat in to protect you from my husband's
shoes,
junk, as opposed to protecting our carpet. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, thank you for spending your Saturday afternoon with us. We've got still quite a while to go. And if you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Wendell, I'm going to be to you in about 30 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They're the only shop in Mesa that I recommend. It's not that there's probably other good shops there, but few of them are able to pass the level that I demand of the shops with respect to years in service and equipment and master or ASE certified technicians, so forth and so on. But Thompson's has been around since 1970. They do all kinds of auto and light truck repair, maintenance services, diagnostic services. They do checkouts of used cars, and they'll prepare your car to park if you're a winter snowbird. And if you're going to be parking it or you're going to be leaving it or starting it up for the first time, they can handle all of that. They have ASE certified technicians, and it's really easy and very convenient to keep your car in tip-top shape if you decide to use Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're located in on Main Street, just east of Stapley. They've been around a long time, and they're centrally located for most everybody in Mesa. Wendell, good morning to you. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I have a 2011 Expedition, about 85,000 miles on it, and the book calls for 520 motor oil. Can I change that, or should I change it with that many miles?
No, you should not. Let me explain. The 520s is synthetic. And how often are you changing your oil on your Expedition?
6,000.
Okay. You could go to 8 if you wanted to.
Okay.
And you could actually go to 9 if you wanted to. The synthetic, okay. The difference between conventional and a blended oil and a synthetic oil is the quality of the oil, how long it's going to last, and it also is an interval. So with just basic what we call conventional oil, you got a 3,000-4,000 mile oil change interval. Then you move up to 7,500 with a blended oil, which is some synthetic and some conventional. Then when you go into the synthetics, you got really 8,000 to 12,000 miles. I run a synthetic in my truck, and I'm on a 10,000 or 12,000 mile interval.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although
okay.
That 520, I think it could go both ways. It could be a semi-synthetic, and it could be a full synthetic.
Okay.
So that would be...
That'd be something you'd want to ask.
It's a mobile one?
It's
a full synthetic.
Yeah, it's a full synthetic. Here's the deal. I want you to pretend. Put your hands together like you're praying to your wife just before she beats you up, okay? And I want you to rub your hands together. Push them hard and rub them, and you'll feel the heat between your hands. Now, I want to challenge you. I want to get in that area, and I want to provide lubrication, and I want to carry the heat away. Am I better to use sewing machine oil, or am I better to use peanut butter?
Sewing machine.
Yeah, and that's the real issue. You're going to get better fuel economy with 520. You're going to get a whole bunch better protection because a 520 flows like a 5 weight when it's cold and flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. And we know that fuel economy, engine wear is reduced, better fuel economy, engine wear is reduced, engine temperature is held stable. There's all these benefits. Plus, think about this. If you change your oil, a lot of people use synthetics and they change it every 3,000 miles and you're just wasting good oil. How many miles a year do you drive?
Probably 15 to 20.
Okay. So if you did 20 and you did 3 7s, that'd be 21. So you could change your oil every 7,000 miles and now you got 3 oil changes. But in Mobile One, if you do 15, you could do 7,500 no problem. And if you did 18,000 miles, you can do 9,000 with no problem. So now we've got 2 oil changes a year, and may I suggest you do one of them at the beginning of the summer in May, and you do one of them at the beginning of the winter in November. So at the two, you walk into the two seasons in Arizona, they're extreme. I hesitate to say extreme for the winter, but and that's exactly what I do. I'm running about 16,000 miles a year, so I'm running 8 and 8, but I do it in May and I do it in November. So, and that's okay. I like that. Now, the only thing is when you extend that out, I want you to check the oil about every second tank fill up or maybe every third. I don't want the oil to drop below the ad mark. If it's at the ad mark, I don't care. If it's slightly above the ad mark, I don't care. But if it's below the ad mark, we're at least a quart low and we need to top that off. Okay?
Right. Okay. What about this new Mobile 020?
They're adding a whole bunch of time to that. I think they're up to 25,000 miles in certain cases on the Mobile,
I'm not sure.
020. I want to tell you, there's lots of companies out there. There's Motorcraft, there's Kendall, there's Dello, which is Chevron, there's Mobile One. They've all got different time frames. I don't know that I'd go to a 020 because a 020 is not really made for your 2011 Expedition. That's of a car that's the last 2, maybe 3 years.
Yeah, I would say overkill is probably the word. It's I would say it's overkill, and I would honestly say you're probably throwing money away. I don't know that you need that.
Right. And I don't think – now let me ask you this, Alan. Would he extend his changes over the 520 from the 020?
I have no idea. I just thought
slightly.
Yeah, that might get you another 1,000 miles on your oil change, and I don't think that's worth it. I just think that we're using an oil that really is for the newer model motors that have a little tighter emission controls on them and have a little tighter tolerances. So if I were you, I'd stick. And I think the cost of the 020 is the same as the 520.
Oh, I think it's a little bit more.
You?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more.
All right, I'd stick with the 520.
If
I were you, I'd just stick with that, and I'd be real comfortable, and I'd only just elongate my oil changes by a little bit. Okay?
All right. Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Wendell. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
Caller, Gary.
Gary, good morning. How can we help you?
Oh, yeah. I got a 2012 Ford Escape, and I just took it back dealership for a recall and something to do with the fuel pump.
Uh-huh.
And I had about 4 gallons in the tank. They did the fix and everything, put it back together. It runs fine, but it has an engine lights on now. I'm wondering, could it be because the gas is low, or
you mean the check engine light is on?
Well, the symbol of an engine's on.
And it's yellow or orange?
It's yellow.
Okay. All right, here's how to handle that, and thank you for asking this, because this is a common question, even my own shop. I would like my customers to come back in and say, hey, Mark, my name's Gary, and I just had my car in, and you had done some work on it. And, Mark, I've got so many miles on it, and, of course, as you know, it's 6 years old, and I've really never had a check engine light on it again, but I got one now. And I'm not sure if it's something that you created or not. But would you take a look at it? Because really, it appears that I got something that I didn't have before. That's a nice way to ask. Now, here's the deal. They can't say this isn't their fault until they know what it is. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
So they can't say, oh, it's not our fault. Wait a minute. You don't know what it is. So they have to go in, and so does my shop. You have to go in, you have to diagnose it, and then they go, you've got an evaporative system problem, it's underneath the hood, see that valve right there? That valve's not working. So I've done the diagnosis for you for free, but I had to do the diagnosis for free because I have to show you that it's not my fault, because this is up front and I was working out back. That kind of a discussion. On the other hand, they say, yeah, the vent on the top of the tank wasn't put on really good, and that's the check engine light. So we reset the light, we reattach the vent, and we put a nice clamp on it, and here's your keys. Thank you very much. We're sorry.
If I had to guess, it's probably that one, especially if they had to drop the tank.
Yeah, and I want to tell you, we know that from this reason, because we've done it.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had to go back in and reattach that vent line, or
Pinched the vent.
And we pinched the vent, all that kind of stuff. So be nice, but just tell them, please don't spend any of my money until you call me. That's a nice way to say, I'm not paying for the diagnosis. That's a nice way to say it. Okay?
Now, I've got another question about the transmission fluid in this thing.
All right, I'm going to have to put you on hold because I'm 12 seconds away from the break, but you stay right there. Stay right there. I'm going to get you first. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We've got 4 open lines, but we're going to get Gary on the other side of the break, and we'll be back right after this. And Kurtz is going to look at it for you. So he's I-17 in Bell. She calls me back and she says, I'll never go to another shop again. She says, they checked the oil pressure and it was good. They diagnosed the oil pressure switch was bad. They put a new oil pressure switch in it. That fixed the light, and I took the truck home. And he saved me, the way I look at it, he saved me $3,000, $4,000. Kurtz is that kind of guy. He's my go-to guy if you live anywhere near I-17 in Bell. He's got ASE-certified technicians. He's been around for a very long time, and he's a good guy. And he's been around since 1987, as a matter of fact. So he does both gas and diesel, and he has ASE-certified technicians. Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 in Bell. Gary, you had another question. Go right ahead.
Now, this 2012 Escape has six-speed transmission and automatic, but it has no tranny pan and no filter to drop. How often should you change the oil in that? The manual says every 30,000 miles, and it only takes like 5 quarts when you drain it
uh-huh.
and put it back in, but I do it twice a year. Because Arizona being hot and everything.
Yeah. How much is that transmission fluid cost you? Isn't it $5, $6, $7, $8 a quart?
It's like I get a whole gallon for like $16.
Okay, so $4 a quart. And you're using the specified transmission fluid that your manual calls for?
Yes.
Okay, all right. I don't think... I'm kind of surprised that you have a 30,000-mile interval on your transmission service on your 12 Escape. I would have expected that you were going to have been in the 80 to 100,000-mile range, so I'm kind of surprised about that. But I think you're doing an overkill. I don't think you should do it twice a year. I don't think your transmission is going to love you anymore. And when you drain it, I bet it's not brown, I bet it's not cooked, and I'll bet it doesn't smell bad at all.
Yeah, and it did the first time. It was kind of brown, and I was worried about it, but then I changed it, and I keep on top of it.
Okay. Well, you can do whatever you want, but I'm just kind of surprised at the 30,000, and I thought your Edge would have had a synthetic fluid in it, so I'm real surprised. Okay. Well, all right, if you're asking me my opinion, I'd probably go at 50,000-mile intervals, and that's what I would do. As long as the fluid isn't brown and it doesn't smell burnt, I need both of those to do it any sooner. Mm-hmm. But your transmission has the ability to go 150,000 miles. So I don't think it's going to go 160 if you change it twice a year. I think if you just stick with, you know, at the 30,000-mile interval, I think you'll be just fine. So, all righty. All right. Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much. Tom, you're up next. How can we help you?
Morning, Mark. How you doing?
Good, good.
Good. You were talking about oils earlier. So I do 90% of my driving on the freeway. Been trying to crowd 7,000 miles on oil interval. I noticed when I go to Walmart with the trams, they have like three different grades. They're a big difference in the quality of the filters, the Step Guards or the Wally Guards, whatever they are.
Okay. I am not a fan in any way, shape, or form of some fancy-dancy filter that's got, we're going to inject molecules into your oil, and we're going to make your motor love you, and we're going to make your car run better, and we're going to grow hair on your head, and we're going to make your wife nice to you, and we're going to make sure that you never sneeze and blow boogers all over everybody. That's all a bunch of crap as far as I'm concerned. I want you to turn the question around. Mark, how many cars are in your fleet that you're responsible for? Probably 30. We have a rental car company, too. So, Mark, what do you guys use? We use the cheapest doggone filter we can find. Now, Champ Filters makes almost everybody's filters in the United States. Baldwin is another one that makes a lot of people's filters. It's just a different painting on the filter. So, if I were you, I would stick with a basic filter. And that's all. I wouldn't put anything fancy on there because it's a marketing thing. You see, when they come into my shop and they tell me, I got this filter and it's really a 2 micron instead of a 5 micron, and it's really this and it's really that, and you'll make another, and here's what they always say, and you'll make another $4 when you sell this filter. That's always the end result, is Mark, if you do this, you'll make more money. So Mark's not interested. Mark sells 20, 30 filters a day. I'm going to put the same filter on your car as I got on my wife's car. So to answer your question, I'd stick with just a basic filter.
All right, that's what I need. Thank you very much.
All righty, you betcha, Tom. And Ron, you're up next. How can we help you, Ron?
Yeah, I've got a question. It's like beating a dead horse because I've listened to you for a lot of years. Trailer tires, ST versus light truck. I had a bad experience years ago with the Goodyear Marathons.
My question is,
what do you think?
Well, first of all, I don't sell or touch Goodyear tires. I have a personal problem with Goodyear tires. I don't have time to go into it, but you can go in there and look at, just Google G159, Goodyear G159, read some of the court documents about that tire and how Goodyear responded to that tire and the people who died because of that tire and all the lies they told about that tire. And as you can tell, my panties are wadded up, but the ST has a strict 65-mile-an-hour limit. And if you want to know what SD tires do at 70 and 75, you drive on the Beeline Highway from Fountain Hills, which is Shea, go to Saguaro Lake, and I'll bet you can't go more than 100 feet without seeing a piece of rubber on the side of the road, and they all come from the boat trailers. So yeah. Here's what I do. I don't put STs on anything. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here next to my son, and I brought my red trailer home the other day, and I said to him, I don't want STs, you know that, and I don't know what we put. Did we put a P-metric or an LT?
We put LTs. Let me hold on. We put LTs whenever possible. There is a few circumstances where we just can't find a LT or a P for a trailer.
A P is a passenger car. Yeah. LT is a light truck.
Yeah, basically, it's not a trailer tire. There is, but if it's possible, I would absolutely recommend getting either a P metric or an LT, preferably an LT if you can. You're going to spend more money, but it's going to last a lot longer. If you can find it, if you can make one work.
Okay, now what he's talking about is, let me tell you about my red trailer. I got two axles, four tires, okay? I need to haul 10,000 pounds on that trailer. So he has to find me a P metric, which is a passenger car tire, or he has to find me an LT tire of a size that's going to work. But if I haul 10,000 pounds, how much should each one of those four tires carry, Tom?
Yeah, 2,500 pounds.
Yeah, so if he can find me, and I think you found me a 2,990.
Like for example, a P-metric wouldn't hold that. A P-metric may hold 1,800, 1,900 pounds, so you'd have to go to an LT, which would hold your 2,500 pounds.
Okay,
right.
So in that particular case, because my Bobcat weighs 6,000 and I want to haul it on this trailer, then the trailer and the Bobcat, I need somewhere in the vicinity of 2,000 to 3,000 pounds of weight. So I guess we went to an LT. I didn't even look at him, but I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I don't remember. But
it has to do with the weight rating. Now, the ST tire, they can go up to 4,000 pounds a tire at times.
Right.
ST?
Yeah.
Or LT?
ST.
Well, yeah, so can LT, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you get into that, then the ST, some people can't get the weight that they need, so they're kind of stuck with the ST because they don't want to spend the extra money for the LT.
Yeah. If you have to get a trailer tire, get a good one. I mean, buy the best one you can find, because...
Give me
some cases,
example.
We have been running the Carlisle HD, and I am not a Carlisle fan, but this one has been giving us, it's their brand newest state of the art, blah, blah, blah. But it's the Carlisle HD. We've had some real good luck with those so far. If you had asked me this time last year, it probably would have been something different, but, but for today in this point in time.
All right. And let me explain what he's saying. It has everything to do with the guy pulling the trailer. So if he's going to pull a trailer once a year and he doesn't check the tires and the tire overheats and blows it off, blows the tire up, and then it takes the fender with it and blah, 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 it's really not the tire's fault. And it's not hard for us to look at a tire carcass and say, man, oh, man, this thing was huge, overloaded, and underinflated. If everybody should run the maximum inflation on their trailer, maximum inflation on the tire, I don't care what the trailer says. Maximum inflation on the tire, because you get the maximum load with the maximum inflation. So it says on the tire, maximum load, 3,000 pounds at 60 PSI. It means you're not going to get 3,000 until you hit 60 PSI. So you got three choices. The ST, you got the P passenger car, and then you got the LT, and those are the three. And we do that for our customers as well. So does everybody else. Anyway, thanks very much. And Ron and Glenn, stay right there, because I'm going to take a break, and we'll be right after this. Welcome back, everybody. It's 46 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and let me tell you real quick about Automatic Transmission Exchange before I get to Glenn. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since 1968. Phil wasn't born yesterday. Phil's been in the transmission business since 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. They'll ride in your car for you with free. If you take them around the block and you can demonstrate the problem, that's kind of the key. The test drive goes after you have learned how to demonstrate the problem or show the problem. You can't take one of their technicians for a ride for 2 hours or take them to Lake Pleasant. But Phil's a good guy. He's been around a long time. So if you live anywhere in Phoenix, 40th Street in Washington is one of the best transmission shops you have available to you in all of Phoenix. Automatic Transmission Exchange. Glenn, good morning, and thank you for holding.
Good morning, gentlemen. I enjoy your program immensely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. I have an 2010 Toyota Tundra. I'd like to level out the front end. And I understand there's rubber and aluminum spacers available.
I happen to have the guy sitting next to me that does that for a living, much to my objections.
I knew it.
And the guy next to me lifts and lowers and does all this fancy stuff, and here's what he does that just really wads up my underwear. The gray-haired guys come in with their new trucks, and he hands them a menu. And they go, tires, wheels, exhaust, cold air kit, horns, and level, lower, and all this kind of stuff. And his average ticket price is much bigger than mine, and his customers give him a hug when they leave, and my customers just kind of wink at me. So I'll let him take the Tundra question.
You said you wanted to level the front end?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you were asking about the difference between a poly spacer and an aluminum?
Yes, and if it's a good or bad idea.
It's a fine idea. We do lots of them. No issues there. As far as the materials, it doesn't matter. Buy the cheapest thing you can find. let me tell you why it doesn't matter. So let's just say, I know that a lot of people say poly because it's quiet and this and that and the other thing. Well, here's the problem with that. You pull the strut out, and the poly goes on top of the strut.
Yep.
The problem is that there's also an extension that screws onto the struts on top of the factory strut.
Yes, sir.
Those are metal, and those are what give those touch the strut, and they touch the coil bucket. So
right.
In reality, it's still metal on metal, regardless if there's there's plastic in there or not. So,
approximately the dollar value. What is the kit cost? What is the labor cost? Now, at the end of the day, we got to align it and re-in the headlights.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually have adjustable headlights, so.
No, that's what
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, so, we usually get about 4.5 to do something like that. To install and align. Now, the only reason that would go up, and I can't think right off the top of my head if it's Tundra, is a lot of those trucks are, they don't have adjustable, they just have adjustable toe on the alignments. I know the F-150, so sometimes we have to do alignment cams on them to do the alignment correct. That would be the only reason that it would accelerate, go up from there.
And it just depends on whether we have adjustments for a camber and caster.
Yeah.
And the aftermarket makes that adjustment because when you raise the nose, you might kick the bottom of the tire out. And so we need to pull that top of the tire out, or we need to push the bottom in. But now the headlights aim, here's what I would suggest you do. If you're going to do this yourself, pull up to your garage door and take a picture of where the headlights are at. And then also put a mark on the driveway where the front tires were at, the center of the front tires. And when you're done, put your truck back in that same thing, and you're going to probably have to drop your headlights just a tad. You'll know it because everybody's going to start flashing at you because we just lift out up your front end a couple inches. And even though it's a couple inches here, it's a foot and a half, 100 feet ahead of you.
That's why I like you, Mark. You're very thorough.
Okay.
Listen, for your information, Mark, my 08 Tundra didn't have adjustable headlights. You couldn't adjust them.
Oh, okay.
And I got flashed all the time because the guy put spacers on.
Yeah.
Now, 010, I got a switch on my dash I can raise and lower them for trailering.
Oh. Now,
well,
see that.
I'll bet you. So they're auto adjust. That's very cool. I've actually never even heard of it.
No, they're manual adjust. And
well, right. But you do it from inside the cab.
Right.
That's
right.
Auto to me. But
yeah. Oh, no. And I understand completely why they give you that, and that's something that has stunned both of us.
I've never seen that before. But I bet you your 08, I bet you if you open up the hood, I bet you there was an adjustment on the headlight itself. I've never seen a non-adjustable headlight one way or the other.
But in his defense, that oftentimes there's a plastic plug on the top of it,
and you're
reaching down 4 or 5 inches with a hex head, and people would look at that and not recognize that's actually the up, down, left, or right.
Absolutely.
So, but anyway, I agree with him. I don't think I've ever seen a car that we couldn't adjust the headlights.
Yeah,
and the body shop guys have never said that to us that fix it. But we're going to defer to you because you know what? We hate it when we say we've never and somebody proves us wrong. So we're going to defer to you and say 10-4. So thank you, Glenn. Thank you very much. Jody, you're up next. How can I help you?
Well, I was listening to you, your earlier conversation about oil change intervals using synthetic.
Okay.
And from previous shows, I seem to remember you have a fairly late model Dodge with a Cummins in it.
I do.
And you're going 10 to 12,000 miles on an oil change?
Yes, sir.
If not more.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have an older Dodge with the 5.9 coming. And the Dodge recommends like 7,500 on the oil change, and then 3,750 for severe service, and I use it for towing, so
okay.
It's severe service.
All right, let me ask you a question. Are you using a 540 or a 1540?
540.
Okay.
And it's a full synthetic. It's the originators of synthetic oils, and I'm sure you know who I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, you know, I know what you're talking about, but it isn't true, but that's okay. He's talking about AMSOIL.
No. Oh.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that isn't true, but it never was that. And there's a fight between Valvoline and Chevron on who was the first one. But nevertheless, let's explain. A 1540 is either going to be a conventional or semi-synthetic.
Yeah.
A 540 is definitely a synthetic.
Yeah.
Now, I'm running, how many quarts does my Dodge take?
I think it's
14 on the Ford, 10 on the Duramax, and I'm at 12.
12, I think.
I think I'm at 12. So I'm running a 540, and I think I'm either running the Dello or a Motorcraft synthetic.
Dello.
Okay, yeah, Dello. A Dello synthetic, a Chevron synthetic. My truck can handle that. In the owner's manual, it allows me to handle that. Your 5.9 isn't really much difference, but I don't know that we had the sophistication of the oil that we have today. And it's okay for you to move forward.
Not.
And so if you're putting a 540 in there, where are you changing the oil?
Well, I'm using a 1540.
Okay, okay. And so you're at 7,500 or thereabouts.
Well, I only put 4,000 a year or so on it.
Oh.
It's not a daily driver. But I'm just wondering because the oil company, they say you can double the recommended.
Which yeah.
Would be going up, you know, from severe service. That would be going up to the regular service interval, 7,500.
Okay.
I'm a little surprised that you're confident about running yours that many miles, and you don't change the filter in between?
Oh, heck no, heck no. We don't have much time, and I know you want to say something, but let me address that. First of all, that's another marketing strategy. Change the filter. Let me explain. Most filters are 20 microns. So let me get this straight. I'm going to take a filter off, and Mark Salem, in 39 years of this business, I've sent a lot of filters out for analysis and a lot of oil out for analysis, and I've never seen, nor has the lab I used ever seen a filter that's plugged, and you can call Caterpillar, who has million-dollar engines in some of their equipment, and they'll tell you the same thing. So I'm going to take a filter that filters at 20 micron, and I'm going to put a filter on that filters at 20 micron. What's the sense in that? We're not going anywhere. We're not doing anything. All we're doing is where somebody says to do this, and this is an old-time thing that came from the 50s, and it wasn't true then, and it is true now. Or it was true then because the filters were paper and toilet, oftentimes rolls of toilet paper the old cowboys used, but today it's not. In your particular case, if you're using a 1540, severe use, I would think a severe use would be...
That is such a...
That is a big, big use.
Oh, that is a CYA move for the manufacturers.
And severe use would be to me a guy who's going to haul a tractor up and down Payson three or four times a week.
Absolutely,
that's a severe use. And
in the summer,
and he's running about 38 to 42 miles an hour. His exhaust gas or his exhaust temperatures are running 1100 Fahrenheit, and he's dropped it into second gear, and he's running the engine at the red line to maintain 38 to 45 miles an hour with a tractor on the trailer behind him. That's kind of a severe use. If you're using it 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 miles a year and you're hauling your trailer up to the mountains and stuff like that, I'm not quite sure that applies, but of course it's your truck. But in my truck, I'm hauling horse trailers, I'm hauling bobcats, I'm hauling grade tractors, I'm hauling big stuff, and I don't go with the severe use. So I don't even know that my 12 Dodge has a severe use.
Yeah, I would tell you, if you're doing it 1540 at 4,000 miles and you're doing that once a year, that's what I would stick with because that's what I would recommend. To answer your second question, I have zero issues, even in my truck, which is an 08, going 15,000 on an oil change with 540. Now, I was given a cleanable filter years ago, and I'm still running it on my truck. Again, I don't know that it works any better or any worse, but because it's cleanable, I inspect it every time at 15,000 miles. I want to see what's in there. I still, to this day, I've never seen anything solid in there. I've never seen sludge in there. I mean, it literally everything pours out and there's nothing left in the bottom. So,
do I have a cleanable filter on mine?
Yeah, you do. Well, we were given them. We don't recommend. You know, I don't sell them. We were given them.
Oh, so you got one on my truck too?
Yeah.
So you're running a risk on my motor of blowing up my motor without telling me.
Mm-hmm.
We both have them. Oh, we both have them.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
you got to remember, Mark, he knows a good mechanic.
That's right. That's exactly right. I don't know who, but we know someone.
Listen, I'm with him on the once a year. If you change it at the beginning of the summer every year, I think, and use your 1540, I think that's a home run. Take the girl to the dance that got you there. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if this has been good for your 5.9, that's fine. One of these days, stop by the shop and look at the 5.9 he built. And we've built a couple of thousand horsepower 5.9s, but this one's kind of special. So if you ever stop by the shop, ask Rowan, and he'll show you one that we built not too long ago. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You can call in. We got another hour to go. So if you have a car question or car problem, or if you want to discuss an issue, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. For the next hour, we're going to talk about cars. The name of the show is Under the Hood, and my name is Mark Salem, and I've been doing car repair radio show since 1988, and I am a master tech, and I've been that way for more than 25 years. So I wasn't born yesterday. I got some gray hair, and every once in a while, it comes out of my ears and my nose as well. Nevertheless, let's talk about Larry Harker's Auto. They're on 38th Avenue in Indian School. They've been in business since 1967. Bob runs the shop. Ellen, his wife, runs the front counter. And Bob is one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. He has the tenacity and knowledge that few people have. There are times, I'm telling you, he is better than I am. So if you've got one of those cars that nobody in town can fix, you might want to call Harker's Auto and make an appointment. Because he's got the magic wand sometimes. Sometimes he can do what other shops can't. But he also does oil changes and vehicle maintenance, vehicle emissions, brake services, alignments. He does foreign and domestic. He's not really picky, but he's good. So Larry Harker's Auto, Bob at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I'm really proud to recommend them and proud that they're on my list of best car repair shops. Adam, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I was calling about a turn signal problem. I have a 97 Dodge 5.9, 1500, and the turn signals just went out, and the symptoms were the same, the flashing, the rapid signal indicator, and then it just went out, all of them went out at one time. So I'm trying to narrow it down to what it might be. I don't think it's the bulb. I think it's the flash indicator.
Okay. Well, let me ask you some questions. When you turn the left turn signal on, tell me what happens quickly.
Oh, nothing happens.
Okay, so you're not flashing on left or right. Is that it?
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
On dash or the...
Okay, and when you turn the hazards on, what happens?
They do go on.
Okay. Now, I want you to turn the hazards on and walk all the way around the truck, and let's make sure we got all four corners flashing. Then, I think if you look in your owner's manual, you're going to have two flashers. You're going to have one for turn signals and one for hazards. Now, I could be wrong about that, and if I'm wrong and you only have one turn signal flasher, then it's called the multi-function switch, which is in the steering column. And I bet on your turn signal lever, you probably turn on the wipers or you set the cruise control. That's a multi-function assembly.
I see.
And so what normally happens is the multi-function switch has to be replaced. That's pretty easy diagnosis for us gray-haired guys. The idea is do we have power and ground going up? And when we turn the turn signals, do we have a flash coming down? So all that work's done underneath the dash. So that's easy. The steering wheel comes off. You disconnect the multifunction switch down at the very bottom. You have to take the plug off of it sometimes. You pull the wire up, the harness up, but you've got a string attached to the other end so that you can use that to pull up the new harness, or pull down the new harness, I should say. And so we put a multifunction switch in. But you may have two flashers, and here's the deal. If both of the flashers have two or three prongs, then you can swap them. So you find, if you see two flashers on the fuse panel, take one out, take number one out, take number two out, and swap them. If your hazards go away and your turn signals work, you know what to do.
Yeah.
All righty.
Sounds good. All right. Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
You betcha, Adam. Thank you very much. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
A 2005 Jeep Wrangler with a four-cylinder engine.
Okay.
And the problem with it is when you drive it on a highway speed for like 20 miles or so, everything's running great. But then when I slow down for a stop sign, it'll stall on me. And it's done it daily since I've had it, and I brought it back to the used car lot that I bought it at, and they've had it twice for a week, and when I get it back, the same issue, I still have the same issue.
Okay.
And I was just wondering what you thought about that.
I think you should disconnect the vacuum line to the EGR valve. And I think you should use a pencil or a golf tee to plug the rubber vacuum line. You're not going to plug the nipple, the metal nipple, on the EGR valve. I want you to plug the vacuum line with a golf tee or a pencil. And I want you to drive it that way for a week or so. If the problem goes away, then the EGR valve is sticking open, creating a lean condition, because the EGR is always supposed to be closed at idle, and it only opens after we're underway. The EGR is called an exhaust gas recirculation valve, and we're taking some exhaust and running it back through the engine because the exhaust has unburnt fuel in it. So we're going to recycle the exhaust back through the engine. It's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with it, and the EGR valve costs you no power whatsoever. You cannot disable it, and you cannot remove it. So we're just going to use this as a diagnostic feature. Plug the vacuum line so it cannot open, and go drive it. If the problem goes away, then the EGR valve's hanging up or sticking, so you can take it off and clean it up, or you can replace it.
Okay, and then that all sounds pretty simple. The other thing I had the issue with is when you're going four-wheeling in it, everything's fine, except for the locking steering wheel keeps dropping down, but I think they might have got that fixed for me. If you stop for, a break, and then you try to start it back up, the dash lights will light up, but it won't turn over. And if I kept, turning the key, it finally will turn over.
Has it got an automatic or standard?
Standard.
Okay. There's probably a clutch pedal switch, and so what I want you to do next time is hold the key to the start position and then push and release and push and release the clutch pedal violently. I don't want you to push it to the floor and then move your foot off and let it pop back. I don't want you to do that. I just want you to hold your key to start and pump the heck out of the clutch pedal. Because we're going to run the start signal through the clutch pedal switch and then to the solenoid and then to the starter. I also want you to go to my website, marksalem.com, and print out FAQ number 28.
FAQ number 28?
At marksalem.com. Mark with a K, Salem like the cigarette.
Okay.
Now, that's going to have you look at the headlights and diagnose what's wrong with your truck. So, in a nutshell, if the headlights are white and bright and you hit the key and they go out to nothing and then you let go of the key and they slowly come back on, it's this. And if you hit the key and the headlights don't change intensity, it's this. And then if you hit the key and the headlights change intensity slightly, then it's this. So FAQ explains all that because you could have a starter solenoid or a starter or a neutral safety switch that's out. So that will help you diagnose it. All righty? And let me tell you something. Used car lots are a good place to buy a car. But if those technicians were worth anything at all, they'd be working for guys like me for $50,000 a year. And we do lots of work for used lots, but I think the owners in those respects are typically understand the limitations of the technicians that they have, which is oil changes and balancing the tires and getting the car ready for service, or getting ready for sale. So I would just caution you about depending on, but if they were successful in fixing a couple of your problems and it's a relationship that has to do with the purchase of the Jeep, then you're kind of stuck there. But I don't want you to spend a lot of money for nothing.
I'm not sure they fixed the steering column or not because I haven't had it four-wheeling since since I got it back because it started selling again. So I, they actually, when I told them, you know, the second time that it's still doing the same thing, they actually told me to bring it to a Chrysler Jeep dealership, which I did, and they've had it for a couple of days, and they said they let me know Monday. But at least I know they're trying, because they wouldn't have told me to bring it to a Jeep dealership, I guess.
Well, and that's why I'm saying I'm giving you something you can try on your own. And if somebody walks into my shop and says, "Mark, this is what I got. Long run, I stop, and the car, it dies. And it's a little hard to get running, and then it runs and idles a little rough, and then all of a sudden it's okay, Mark, and I can drive and stop and drive and stop. And when I pulled this line off the EGR valve and I put a pencil in there, then this hasn't happened in 2 weeks." My response is you just saved yourself $100 worth of diagnostic money. You told me everything I needed to know. So that's why I'm offering you that. If the dealer can't duplicate the problem, there's a good chance that they would say what I say. I can't duplicate the problem. Do you want me to guess with your money, or you want to wait till it gets worse and easier to find? Because those are the only two options. If you bring your car in and every other Sunday when I turn on the radio, the horn honks. Come on. You know, I'm not going to be able to duplicate that. You know, let's start with something stupid. Let's just disconnect the radio for a couple of weeks and see if that makes a difference. I don't know. So turn the steering wheel left and right. When you turn on the key, turn the steering wheel left and right and see if you can get the horn honk. I want you to hit it real hard. I want you to adjust it up and down violently. I mean, I'm going to give you some, and most shops are going to do the same. We're going to give you something to do so you can help us diagnose it. But anyway, thank you very much for your call. That was a great call. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, so you got a 1 in 5 chance of grabbing one of them, and if you want to talk cars, you can. Let me tell you about S&S Tire. S&S Tire is on the west side. They're really good at what they do. They've been around since 1976. They're on their second generation of guys. They have three locations to service you: Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They do oil changes, tire balances, alignments. They do repair. But what they're really good at is selling tires. So they have a list of tires and a very comprehensive line of tires where you can go in and they'll look at your size and you can say to them, "I'd like a price for 2 or 4. Out the door price, and I'd like it on your good, your better, and your best." And they can pull that off. They can show you the good, better, best. They can give you a price out the door for good, better, best, and you can decide what you want to do. Now, there's a tread wear number on the tire that kind of gives you an idea of what the expected life is going to be. So a tread wear number of 300 and a tread wear number of 600 would suggest the 600 is twice as good as the 300. And that's printed on the sidewall. But they're going to walk you through that. So they're really good at what they do. They have tires from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. And like I said before, they can balance your tires. They do alignment, suspension work. So if they see a wear pattern that's unusual on your tires, they can diagnose it and bid the repair. Upper control arm bushings, lower control arm bushings, lower ball joints, they know how to do that. And that's the time to have it done, is when you're having your tires changed, because the tires tell the story. Good even wear, no harm, no foul. We got inboard wear, that's something. We got outboard wear, that's something else. That's what it's all about. So S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. We'll be back. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're here till 12, so if you want to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. I want to tell you something, and I want to clean something up that I may have made a mess with. AMSOIL is an oil that's a good quality oil. It's sold in like an Avon environment where it's a multi-level sale. So there you got this big cheese up in the top who sells to this guy and this guy sells to this guy. I'm not berating AMSOIL at all. I'm not. It's a good oil. It's typically not found in Walmart or auto repair parts places and stuff like that. It is a good quality oil, but in Mark's opinion, it's no better than any of the rest of them. So I'm going to say that AMSOIL is every bit as good as Delo, Chevron, Valvoline, Castrol. Who else can we throw out there?
Mobil.
Mobil. It's the same. It's really a matter of price as far as I'm concerned. So I buy oil by hundreds and hundreds of gallons at a time, and I don't move around a lot. And I think right now we're with Motorcraft. And in spite of the fact...
Chevron.
Oh, Chevron on the diesel side. I think we're on Motorcraft on the car side, but I'm not sure because Andy's got that under control. But the idea is that AMSOIL is a good oil, and if you like AMSOIL, then use it. The problem is that you're going to be hand-carrying your oil into the shop, and sometimes shops will allow you to do that, and sometimes they'll let you do it once, but not every time, and so forth, so just check with your shop. Let's go to the phones, and let's talk with Glenn. Glenn, you had a second question.
Yes, I think Gil hung up on me.
Okay, I may have. I'm sorry.
No,
I'm
Gil.
Oh, Gil did.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll flog his butt. Go ahead.
That would be appropriate.
Yeah.
No, number one, if I met you, I'd give you a hug.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And secondly, you're going to like this.
Okay.
I was wrong.
Okay.
My 08 is adjustable. I was just told by the previous owner he couldn't figure it out, so he didn't think it was possible, and I left it at that.
That's okay. You know, saying I was wrong is part of my everyday life. So, and I use that every time my wife's mad at me. I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I don't care. I say that just to diffuse the stuff. But, you know, we talked about that, and there are Department of Transportation or DOT and federal regulations that we have to be able to adjust your headlights. But we opened that door for that. But thank you for calling back. Thank you very much.
But I had a shock question.
Okay, go.
And I'm not sure if I have struts or shocks because I got a coil over the front shocks.
Okay.
Then you have a strut.
Yeah, that's a strut.
Okay. And one of them is weeping oil beneath the boot on these Bilsteins.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I'm suspecting I might as well replace them both. Number one, is a Bilstein a good replacement? And then number two, should I change the back ones if I change brands or if I change the front one?
Okay, let me just change your question just a little bit. Alan, do you install a lot of struts?
Yes.
Okay. And Alan, do we have any particular problem or do we have any particular affinity with one or two brands?
I use as much as I can, Bilstein as much as I can.
Okay. And are they good shocks and
yes.
last a long time and
yes.
are they a good value?
Yes.
Okay.
Honestly, I'm surprised. I don't know that I've ever seen a Bilstein leak. I'm surprised to hear that.
Okay. And number two, should he do the backs if he's going to do the fronts or should he just do the one front?
I wouldn't do the one front. I'd probably do them in a pair, but I don't know that you'd necessarily need to do the back.
Yeah, I'm with him all the way. I like Bilstein.
If you have money to burn, then, you know, then you can.
Well, maybe I should pull the boot up because it's coming from beneath the boot.
I'm not saying that it's not leaking. I'm just saying that one of the reasons we use them is because they don't leak. So if it is, then, I mean, it's not unheard of, I'm sure.
Here's a bad thing. I don't know who's been working on your truck, but there has been times in my life where there has been guys squirt oil on stuff that they shouldn't. So I would just lift the boot up, wipe that area down, spray some brake cleaner on it, clean that area up, and look at it in 30 days and see what the heck happens. So I think but I wouldn't do. How many miles are on the truck we're talking about?
60.
Oh, God, no. Just leave the rears alone. You'll be fine. All righty. Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you very, very much.
You betcha. Bob, you're up next. Bob, how can I help you?
Morning, guys. Do all cars have some kind of bypass filter, you know, oil pressure?
Yes.
Like if the oil is too thick, that it'll bypass the filter.
And you know what else? They all bypass first thing in the morning.
It's in the filter.
Yeah, it's in the filter. And here's how it works. We got pressure coming in and pressure going out. So in the Minnesota, when it's 20 below zero, the oil's peanut butter. So we start the motor up and we're pushing 60 pounds of oil pressure in, but we've got 10 coming out. Well, at that point, the filter bypasses. Once the oil starts warming up, then the filter will close and run it through the filtering. But it's within the oil. Let me explain. The people in Minnesota don't get any more or less life out of their cars than the people in Arizona, in spite of the fact that they're bypassing the oil filter when they start up. But in Arizona, during the wintertime, we do the same thing. But I'm trying to represent to you that this is all not worth the discussion because the oil that's in the pan has already been filtered a jillion times as it went through the filter. So if we're going to rotate that oil through the filter on a good cold morning for what effectively could be a minute and a half, who cares? So the answer to your question is it's in the filter.
So what happened was I've got a friend who has a new car with one of those. It's just the element, you know, it's not the spin-on filter. You know?
Yes.
And his engine failed due to a lubrication failure.
Okay.
And when the dealer took the filter out, the element, it was like crushed, like the filter was all collapsed because they used another, not the manufacturer brand of filter. and the dealer's telling them that the filter never filtered. It was in bypass the whole life
okay.
of the vehicle, of that oil change, and that's why the engine failed.
Okay.
So they're disallowing the warranty claim.
Okay. All right. Well, so they're going to replace the warranty. Are they going to replace the motor?
No, they're not.
They're not.
The dealer doesn't want to stand behind it because I don't know if you've seen it with those. Sometimes people don't seat the filter in the cap all the way, and the filter kind of collapses.
Okay. Well, if it's an element filter, it has a spring, and it's going to be pushing against the ceiling surface. I think what he should do is I think he should respectfully just hold his car there, and I think he should get the receipt, and I think he should call the filter manufacturer, and let's put the filter manufacturer with the dealership. And there's a good chance that the dealership's filter is made by the manufacturer of his filter. I think I'd get them involved. Second of all, I would turn it over to my insurance company if he has full coverage, and the insurance company can subrogate that. That they may very well say, look, we understand that there's a product failure according to the dealer, so we're going to put your engine back together, and then we're going to take that filter, and we want the filter and all the dealer statements, because when it comes down, I'm going to talk about shops here, shops. When it comes down to saying something and writing something and saying your name, that oftentimes is the difference between the men and the boys. So he needs to say to them, I need you to write down what you say happened. I need you to sign your name to it. And I need you to tell me in writing that you're denying my claim. Now, you should do that at a chain store. You should do it at my store. You should do it at an independent store. In anything they say, you ask them to write it and sign it. I've been involved in this thing, what you're talking about, I can't tell you how many times. And they just blame it on something. And about, in my experience, in my expert testimony, 85% of the time, they end up doing what they don't want to do. So it's a matter of show me your proof, and then you find out, wait a minute, this has nothing to do with it. If the filter collapsed, it could have collapsed because the oil pressure regulator in the oil pump went crazy and overpressurized the filter and collapsed it. So this could have been an oil pump problem, and the oil pump could be bad because something came apart inside the engine which contaminated it. So this could be something over here that began to wear, a cam bearing, that contaminated the oil pump, and that stuck it wide open, and so instead of having a regulated amount of oil come through the filter, we're running heavy-duty pressure, and that's what happened. We'll be back right after this. It's 33 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and I got to clean up a couple of things real quick. When we're talking about the car manufacturers and they say that you must use our products, that's illegal. There's the thing, and you can Google this, Magnuson-Moss Act. Magnuson-Moss Act. And the Magnuson-Moss Act came up after a vacuum cleaner company said you have to use our bags. And then Toyota said in the old days you have to use our oil filter. Well, the government came in and said if they have to use your vacuum bags and if they have to use your oil filter, you have to provide it for free.
Is that to keep the warranty intact? You have to use our oil filter to keep the warranty intact? Is that
no,
kind of...
any time that you have to buy a product that's in conjunction with your vacuum cleaner or your pool pump thing or whatever, if you have to buy the maintenance items, the products from the dealer okay. or the manufacturer, they have to provide it for you for free.
Gotcha.
So they can't say you have to buy a Mopar oil filter or a Motorcraft oil filter or a General Motors oil filter, because if they do, or a Toyota, or if they have to provide it for free. So that eliminates this crap about you got to buy our stuff. So just Google the Magnuson-Moss Act and it's easy. Strictly Diesel is up north. It's a good diesel place. They're a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. They've got some of the best diesel techs in the business. They're dedicated to providing the best service and getting the job done right the first time and under the estimate. They're diehard diesel service and repair and parts place, and foreign and domestic light diesels, they work on it all. So they're up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Diesel, Strictly Diesel service and repair is open Monday through Friday, and they also sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. So you can get more information from my best car repair shops list, and you'd click on diesel shops and you can find all about Strictly Diesel. Let's go to Michael. Michael, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I've talked to you many times over the years. In fact, you remember you called me Fred Flintstone one time.
I hope you didn't take offense to that.
Well, brakes on my T-Bird, but it worked. All I had to do after that was rebuild the battery box and change some clothes.
Oh, good deal. Good deal.
Okay,
good deal.
I have a question about oil. I have a 20-year-old BMW Z3, 100,000 miles on it, and the manual says anything below 50 to use a 530, anything above minus 10, 15W40, and that's it. I know oils have changed, but the car hasn't. Should I change that recommendation or stick with what I've got?
No. Let me ask you a question. Are you using any oil over 3,000 miles?
No.
Are you leaking any oil?
Oh, no.
Okay. Fair enough, fair enough. A drop here or there. I'm talking about a puddle the size of the bottom of a Coke can. So nothing like that. Okay, you don't see any blue smoke, and you're not fouling any spark plugs, right?
Right.
I'd stick with the 540, the 1540. What about you, Alan?
Same thing.
I like the 1540. First of all, we don't get down to 10 below zero here. You know that. And second of all, the 40 is going to give your older motor a little bit of protection. We call it the marshmallow effect. It's basically, the people think 40 is like a peanut butter and it's going to protect my oil. Well, we don't want peanut butter, but it is a thicker viscosity oil. So it will help control and minimize oil leaks and oil consumption. So I vote 1540. That's what I vote.
Okay, I'll stick with that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you. Tom, you're up next. Tom, how can we help you?
Hi, Mark. I listen to the show a lot. Haven't called in for a couple of years, but I've got, I think, probably the weirdest thing. This one's probably going to go in the book.
Okay.
My wife's 2007 Chrysler 300, we bought new, and she hardly drives it at all. And it had about 66,000 miles on it. We had just had it detailed, and they asked at the car wash, remain nameless, do you want an oil change later? And I said, sure, go ahead. So she drove about 200 miles after that over the course of about 2 weeks, maybe. You know, just a little here, a little there. And she pulled onto the freeway in Scottsdale and was going about 70, just got up to speed, and she says the engine blew up, smoke filled the cab and everything. Pulled over. Well, long story short, we had it towed to the dealer, and there was a hole in the engine block. When they looked at it, there was no piston, no rod, or anything in the cylinder. The spark plug was crushed. So ultimately, we looked to the last place that did the oil change, the car wash, and oddly, when she went in to pick the car up, they didn't charge her for the oil change. They said, oh, we're giving you that for free, no problem. And when she called them after this, they said, we have no record of you in our computer. You have the receipt. She said, yeah, of course. And he said, okay, blah, blah, blah. And we also have you on video, so we know we changed your oil. So ultimately, turned it into the insurance company. They turned us down, said, well, if it's mechanical failure, we don't cover that. Also had bumper-to-bumper a powertrain warranty through Chrysler, and they said, well, you know, you didn't come in for the appropriate check at whatever mileage, and like I say, only 66,000 miles. So everybody's turned us down, and we haven't gone after the car wash yet.
Okay,
so,
well, the real issue...
Sorry about that.
Okay. it really depends on what happened. Okay, I'm hearing that there's a hole in the side of the block and the rod's gone and the piston's gone, but I want to know about the rest of the motor. I want to know if we've got damage up the crankshaft and down the crankshaft from the one that came loose. Now, if we've got everything in front at the cam bearings, the rod bearings, and the crank bearings up front of this defect is fine, and behind this defect is fine, then it ain't an oil pressure problem. Because oil pressure has to wipe out just everything to the problem. So if you've got six rods on a crankshaft, there's no such thing as you just blowing the middle rod. That doesn't happen. Now, if it does happen, then there's going to be metal, there's going to be signs. So your insurance company is unfortunate. You need to change insurance companies, but most of the insurance companies will hire somebody and go look at it and determine what it is. Now, is it the lack of oil? Is it the lack of oil pressure? Or did something just come apart on the inside of this? So we would look at all the other lubricated moving parts, and if we determined that all these moving parts were fine, and all we had is an explosion in number three, number two, number one, whatever, then we had something come apart there. And that has nothing to do with the oil change. It is unusual that they didn't provide you paperwork. It is unusual that they said what they said. It's very unusual, but the real question is what happened? And sometimes they take it for a spin, and some young kid gets in it, and it's a hot rod, and he pops the motor, he does something stupid, they take it back, and I'm not saying they did this, I'm saying I've seen this before, and the shop puts a bunch of peanut butter and STP in it, and then somewhere down the line the motor just throws in the towel, and in reality it was happened back here. It may be too late for all of this. It may be that everybody's had their fingers in this and stuff like that, but that's what normally happens. You might only have two choices. The insurance turned you down, the dealers turned you down, the aftermarket company turned you down, and they're all blaming somebody else. And then you've got this oil change facility that's pointing at fingers at other people too.
The famous line is you don't know who's at fault until you know what it is, what is wrong, or who caused it until you know what it is.
And somebody has to do the autopsy to figure that out.
And that's someone good, that's not hard to figure out.
So, and you're right. Thank you for putting it in a nutshell. No one knows whose fault it is until we know what it is. And like I said, I can give you 100 war stories about something like this. I just did a tractor with a $500,000 engine in it. And the whole question was somebody put dirt in the tank and then, oh no, they put it in the engine and all this kind of stuff. And I went and looked at it and I said, this is an oil starvation problem. Everything from front to back is wiped out and somebody forgot to check the oil and it has all the signs of oil pressure. And the insurance company politely declined, and the guy goes, well, I had 4,000 hours on it anyway. I'll just put another engine in it. He was nice. But I think his workers were telling him that we did check the oil, when in reality it's clear to me that it was front to back. This thing was wiped out front to back, and it screamed oil starvation. And oil starvation says either the pump went bad, which is a mechanical issue, or there was no oil in it, and that's my conclusion. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take open calls, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem, and we're both here at your service, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about a shop, and I'm going to just read you a letter I got, and it speaks volumes. Mark, I listen to your show. I hear you talk about Action Auto on Deer Valley Road. I took my 2011 Subaru to them. I asked them to check the oil, check my fluids, hoses, belts, and stuff like that. I basically put my checkbook and trust in their hands. They changed the oil and filter, recommended a brake fluid flush, which I agreed to. They didn't push me on it. The mechanic who did the work had years of experience, came out personally into the lobby to tell me what he found and answered my questions, shook my hand, then thanked me for coming in. Wow. The shop was clean. Everyone was friendly, competent. The owner was there, which is, his name's Tom. Action is everything you described and promised they would be. They'll be my shop of choice from now on. Thank you for your recommendation. His name is Steve. This is what I live for. This is what I live for. So Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, happy customer, and this is the kind of service you're going to get from the shops on my best car repair shop list that you can find on my website at marksalem.com. And see, let me write down, I got to put down that I've talked about this on 5-5 of 18. We just talked to Tom, and he had an engine that failed with his wife. And there's the oil change shops pointing the finger at the dealer. The dealer says no. The aftermarket company, who he had an aftermarket company, said no. This is one of those situations that unless the car is in exactly the same condition it was when it was towed in, and nobody's taken parts off of it and the blah, 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 then everything's contaminated. And my advice to him would be really simple, and that is just cut your losses. Don't use the dealer again. Don't buy an aftermarket warranty again.
Period, ever for any car.
And don't use the oil change place again. And tell everybody you know. It's just real simple. These three people, my engine failed, and these three people all declined coverage, but they all didn't have a good reason why. And they all pointed fingers at one another. And you can have your say on the internet as well. If you go into some places and you just type the name of the company and reviews, and then you can go in and do whatever you want. Just be careful, be nice, and tell the truth. But you're far better off just to cut your losses, get it out of there, take it someplace else, look at a used engine, and look at a new engine, look at a rebuilt engine, put it back together, and here's the deal. I'm going to assume, and I don't know what the engine costs on this, because I don't know if you're buying a new rebuilt or a new or a used one, but I'm thinking you're probably going to be in the $3,000 to $5,000 range. I don't even know what motor you got. At the end of the day, if it's $3,000, that car in service will pay you back, really, after about 15 months.
You're talking about parts only, right?
No, I'm talking about complete used engine.
Oh, used. Okay.
A complete rebuilt engine, because that's a long block. He's got a hole in the block.
Oh,
there's,
yeah.
There's no fixing that.
No.
But what happens if we could find this motor in a wrecking yard that's really clean, has great compression, and has low mileage on it,
right,
even lower than what he's got right now?
Right.
So I feel for you, but I'm telling you, you are not served well by trying to hire experts at this point and get these three people to come together. It's too late for that. It's too late. That should have happened at the very, very beginning when the dealer said no, and he may or may not had a good reason why. Anyway, somebody's on the phone. How can we help you? What's your name?
Gary.
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 Gary, go ahead.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I've got a 2011 F-150, and I was pumping gas just yesterday at the Costco, and I went, a lot of times I go on the opposite side, so I have to pull the hose around to, you know, get to the opening. And what was, and I do it, I've been doing it that way for, you know, depending on what side I go on, but it's not uncommon for me to do that because that's one of the open lanes. But when I was doing it, the guy behind me said, "You're leaking something." And I looked down there, and I identified it as it's like a little overflow tube or something, and it was gas that was coming out. One of the things was the way I do it, too, is I kind of let it pulls back so that the angle of the nozzle sort of comes up a little bit. But I went back there today and repumped it and did the same thing, and it didn't come out this time. So I was wondering what the heck was going on.
Well, do you have two tanks, one on each side, or just one tank?
Just one tank.
Okay. Your truck's supposed to have an airtight system. So we're going to suck the fumes off your tank, and we're going to run them through the engine again. And we've got all kinds of solenoids that make that happen and stuff. You should not be leaking unless you're leaking out of the inlet. So if you overfill the tank and we've got gasoline coming out of where you stick the nozzle in, if you look right below there, there's a hole. And more than likely, that goes from a tube down to drain, and that's just the overflow. But when you put the gas cap on there, there should be no venting at all. We don't want any liquid to come out at all. In this particular case...
This actually is one of those that doesn't have a gas cap.
Okay. All right. I understand. Is it possible that it came out that arena, that area? Because my Weiss Edge has the same thing. Is it possible? Because there's been times I've overfilled it. I go click, 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 and you're not supposed to do that. And I've had gas come out at me because I've stuffed the tank full and I shouldn't have. Is that possible you did that one time?
No, because I actually stopped it. I had about, I was about half, no, three quarters of the way full. And I stopped it because I wasn't sure exactly
okay.
What was going on.
All
and
right.
I kind of, you know.
Well, the good news is that your truck is sophisticated enough to where if it can't vent the tank, it'll set a check engine light because it pulls a vacuum on the tank. And if the tank won't hold vacuum, that means some portion of the tank is compromised. I would just do what you're going to do. If, in fact, it leaks again, I want you to triangulate the leak. I want you to say it's right here horizontally, and then from the back bumper, it's right here. So you're going to triangulate the leak and show us where it's at, and somebody's going to have to go in there and put some smoke in the evaporative system and find out where the compromise is at. So we use a machine that blows dense white smoke. We hook it up to that particular system, and wherever there's a leak, we're going to have dense white smoke. So, but right now, I wouldn't worry about it. It didn't happen the next time, and so just keep an eye on it. And if you see gas on the ground again, then you're going to have somebody address it. Okay?
Okay. Would you recommend, I recently took my truck to Bridwell's and for disc brakes, and they seemed to do a good job. They were a little more expensive than, like, a previous estimate that I had. But I've heard you speak about, I think it's, is it Blackman's?
Blackwell's at 40th and Greenway. And tell him you have a coupon. You forgot it at home, but you have a coupon from Mark Salem for 50% off any repairs. And he'll laugh just like you laugh. But the idea is I wouldn't do anything until I had gas on the ground again. I wouldn't do anything
okay. Because
I think you're wasting your time. I think there's a good chance that this, you know, but again, it's not supposed to leak. That's supposed to be an airtight system. So just fill it up again and again, and if you don't see gas in the ground, then let's forget it. And are you sure it came from your car and not from somebody else's?
Yes, I actually got down on the ground, and I could identify it coming out when I stopped pumping. When I released it, it stopped.
All right. And here's what I want you to do. Now that you know where the hose is at, next time you have your oil change, then lift it up in the air and tell them you want to go out and show them the hose. And they'll be able to track it backwards, and maybe it is an overflow from the filler neck, and that's not typically parked, because when you close that door where you stick your nozzle, when you close that door, it's supposed to be an airtight system. So have somebody look at the hose, because if you saw it yourself, you can point it out, and Blackwell could pull that off. As far as pricing is concerned, let me stick up for Bridwell's for just a second. You can bid what appears to be something stupid like a water pump. There's guys that put tax and license or tax and environmental charges and shop supplies in their estimates, and there's guys that don't. And that's going to change the estimate by 10%. Then there's guys out there that are going to do the water pump and the labor, and that's all. But that's not what we need. We need the water pump, the labor. We need the lower hose clamp. We need a gallon and a half of coolant. We need to check the pressure on the radiator cap, and we need to make sure the thermostat's working. So there's a lot more to it than just water pump and labor. So in their defense, we have to make sure we're comparing apples with apples. So I understand, and people say that about me, but here's what I say back to them. No one, In 39 years has ever left our facility with an estimate that was one penny over their estimate. Not one penny. And here's why. It's because we do our estimates, they have everything in them, and we tell you, you'll write your check or pay this much or less. We're guaranteeing you, and we've eliminated all that crap that everybody's doing with respect to bid. Not everybody, but some people do with respect to bidding. So it's not uncommon for my customer to call and say, Mark, I can get, you know, $100 off your price. I know, but let's compare apples to apples. I got the part, I got the labor, I've got the coolant, I got the shop supplies, I got the environmental charges, I got the sales tax, and I got another $20 in there just for a buffer for me. And he goes, oh, okay. And I said, you get their numbers for the same thing. And oftentimes the customer is a little bit more aware of the situation afterwards. But thank you for bringing that up, Gary. Thank you very
Bob,
much, and good luck.
Calling?
Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hello. My question is kind of an old standard, I guess, but changing out my car, putting a motor swap in it, basically.
Okay.
Trying to save the vehicle. And my question is, about distilled water in the radiator.
Okay.
Is it worthwhile to do that on cars? This is an 02 car, but then I've got a couple older cars too, and trucks. I mean, like from the 60s and 70s.
Right.
And my whole thing is how I know our water here in Phoenix is not the greatest, but I'm wondering about damage to the motor. And this current one is an aluminum motor also.
Okay.
So
no.
I know that.
Yeah, the answer to your question is no. We don't put distilled water, and you definitely don't put RO water, reverse osmosis water, in your car. We definitely don't do that. The coolant has all the additives necessary to condition your water. It has all your additives necessary. The idea is this. The coolant and the water, 50-50 mix, will protect you. So distilled water is an old wives' tale. We never did need distilled water, but I also want to draw your attention to this. I want you to look at the faucets on all your house. And I'll bet they in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, there was all this white crap all over the faucets. And today, we don't have that. And it has to do with the clarity of our water, and it has to do with the lack of acidity of our water. And it's very balanced. It's pH balanced. So to answer your question, just use a 5-gallon bucket, put a gallon of coolant in it, put a gallon of water in it, stir it up, put it in the car. If you need more, a half a gallon of coolant, a half a gallon of water, and do it like we do it. It's not that scientific. We do just exactly that. And thank you. Okay, Bob, I don't have time. I'm sorry. But here's what I will give you. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com, and I'll take your email as quickly as you send it to me. I'll call you back. Leave your phone number for me, and I'll call you back, and I'm going to call from a block number for obvious reasons. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services, family-owned and operated since 1982. They have high quality and service they can provide, and they stand behind their work. Did I say that he's been around since 1982? At Auto Dynamics, the staff and technicians are not paid a commission. commission or a percentage of your repair bill, so therefore they don't sell unnecessary parts and labor. So if you're in the Sun City area, I'd like to recommend Automotive Dynamics. It's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. North side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Folks, you can also email me if you have a car question, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com, but if you go to marksalem.com and look at my FAQs first, I would appreciate that. Thank you for spending Saturday with me. Thank you very much, and I hope I've helped you or given you something that will save you money down the road. And if you want to take issue with something I've said, I'm okay with that. We can have a civilized discussion, and we can both have our say. And in our industry, that happens, not on a regular basis, but it does happen. So drive safe, wear your seatbelt, God bless you, and I'll see you next Saturday right here at 10 o'clock on KKNT 960 AM.